grace is my story, all the way from earth to glory. Since by grace he lifted me from sin and woe. Living grace he has extended, as on him my heart depended. And he'll give new grace when it's my time to go. Grace not yet discovered, grace not yet uncovered, grace from his bountiful store. Grace to cross the river, grace to face forever, there'll be new grace I've not needed before. There's been grace for every trial, there's been grace for every mile. There's been grace sufficient from his vast supply. Grace to make my heart more tender, grace to love and pray for sinners. There'll be new grace when it's my time to die. It was this grace that brought me safe thus far, and grace will lead me home. Yes, there is grace not yet discovered, grace not yet uncovered, grace from his bountiful store. Grace to cross the river, grace to face forever, there'll be new grace I've not needed before. There'll be new grace I've not needed before.
Thank you, Brother Darrell. Appreciate that. Let me just mention this as another prayer request. Brother Ricky just told me that one of our ladies got a text from the Finleys. Anita Finley, you guys probably saw the email yesterday. Her mother had been placed in hospice. She's just in bad, bad shape. Well, she is now taking a turn for the worst. And so on your prayer bulletin, if you want to highlight a lady named Joyce Smith, she's already listed there, but I want you to highlight her and pray for her. Also, I want you to just simply... tonight we have no business. I want you to just pick up one of the finance reports out in the foyer and take that with you. And if you have any questions, just ask. And we'll record in our minutes tonight that we prayed for our sick. We'll record that we gave out a finance report, and that'll be entered into the minutes of our church. But we do not have any business, and so we will not have a business meeting as such. I call your attention this evening to the Epistle of James. We've been in James for a while. We're going to be in James for a while. We're calling it everyday Christianity. In other words, how do you live every day as a Christian in this old world? How many of you are old enough to remember a comedian named Flip Wilson? All right, a few of you are, all right. How many of you have no idea who Flip Wilson is? I knew that it was going to be at least those three. Now we got four, okay. All right. Yeah, GW's raising his hand. Him and Flip were good buddies. All right. Do you remember what he made famous on television? The Devil Made Me Do It. All right. Well, tonight I want us to look at a passage beginning in verse 13 of chapter 1. We'll go through verse 16, and I want us to just basically walk through these verses And the title of the message tonight comes really from the truth in verse 13. And it just simply is this: God can't do it. God can't do it. Now somebody says, God can do anything he wants to do. There's some things that God can't do. You say, now wait a minute, Brother Tommy. Do you know that the Bible says that it's impossible for God to lie? Because he is absolute truth. In our passage tonight, we're going to see something else that God cannot do. Now, if you look at verse 12, which is the verse that I preached on last week, I only covered one verse last week. But in verse 12 and in verse 13, there's a change in words. Now, in our King James Bible, it says there's temptation in verse 12. And then it says there's tempted in verse 13. I'm tempted of God, tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. Those words are not the same Greek word. And what I want you to understand is that in verse 1 through 12, there's a word that simply means to be tested or to be tried. So if you want to write that in the margin of your Bible for future reference, the word is basically this, pierismos. That's about as good as I can pronounce it. And it just simply means to test or to try. And so when it says that blessed is the man that endureth temptation, the word temptation in verse 12 means blessed is the man that endureth the testing of the Lord. But there's a little subtle change when you get to verse 13, and the word there is pirazo. And what that word basically means, it means to entice or to give opportunity to sin. And so I want us to look, first of all, at a doctrine that must be always remembered. Let's look at verse 13. Let no man, and whenever it says no man, it means ladies as well. It's just in the generic form there. Let no person say, when he or she is tempted or solicited to do evil, that I am tempted of God. So in other words, it's just a flat out statement. When you have the idea, I just think I just want to sin. I look at that, I see that, I think I just want to do that. Straight off the bat, James says that didn't come from God. And if you look at the tense of this word tempted, it has the idea that it's something that is timeless. It continues that in times past, God did not tempt people to sin. And nor in the future will he tempt people to sin, nor right now in the present does God tempt people to sin. And so anytime you have a temptation that crosses your mind, anytime something is placed in front of you that is evil, that is sinful, something that is godless, you don't ever have to worry about God being the one that sent that. Now, why is it that we don't need to worry about that? Well, because the Bible talks about the character of God in the middle part of this verse. It says, for God cannot be tempted with evil. Now, let that sink in for a moment. In other words, God is so righteous, he is absolute righteous, that he is not even tempted to do wrong. It's not something that he could even envision to do wrong. Do you know there's a doctrine in theology and it's called the impeccability of Christ? That means that Jesus was impeccable. And somebody will say, well, what about that verse where it says that Jesus in all points was tempted like we are? It doesn't mean that he was tempted to sin. It means that as far as human desires, he was tempted in those areas. He was tempted for hunger. He was tempted for being thirsty, those types of things. But Jesus could not have sinned because he's God. And so when it says, for God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he, neither does he tempt any man or any woman. And so when we walk through verse 13, we see that there is a doctrine that we need to make sure that we remember. Now, if you look at verse 14, we're going to kind of get into the meat of the message tonight in the next couple of verses. It says, but every man, no exception, every person that's in here tonight is affected by temptation at some point in your life. You say, well, I just don't have any temptations. I got to watch you because you'll lie about something else. Every one of us are tempted. You know, sometimes young people are tempted when it comes to sensuality. Sometimes middle-aged people, they're tempted maybe when it comes to some finances. Older people sometimes are tempted in areas maybe of popularity, those types of things. And so every one of us are tempted in some way. And it says, every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and is enticed. Now, you know, there's some desires that are good desires. I don't know if you ever have ever thought about this, but there are some desires that are God-given. I really think that eating is a good thing from the Lord. As a matter of fact, there's a lot that the Bible has to say about people eating. One of the verses or passages that I'll probably preach on before too long will probably come out of Acts chapter 2. And one of the things that early church did was they would share meals together. They would spend time, and it was around food. Well, as a matter of fact, when the marriage supper of the Lamb comes about, why do you think the word supper is in it? I think that there's a real good possibility that there's going to be something in heaven that is going to be kind of like heavenly food. It says marriage supper. In the South, when you eat supper, it's usually pretty good. And so there are desires that we have. I think that intimacy between husbands and wives are a wonderful thing. If you say, well, I just don't think that's a good thing. Well, evidently you don't want the human race to continue. God made it where that there would be a godly way for those desires to be fulfilled. But one of the problems that happens is that Satan will exploit those desires. He'll try to get us to take a shortcut. He'll try to get us to not do it in God's timing and in God's ways. And if we look at our verse, and it says, drawn away, maybe take your pen and just underline those two words, drawn away. That simply means to be led to a trap. Just led to a trap. When I was a little boy, one of the things that I used to love to do would be to make bird traps. Brother Billy's shaking his head. He's probably done this, and I guarantee you some of you other old codgers have done it too. All right? I would get a cardboard box, and I would get some bread, and I'd crumble the bread up and put it under the box. But I would take a trail of bread and I would lead it out from the box a little bit. Then I would lift the edge of the box up. I'd put a stick under it with a string, and the string would maybe go 15, 20 feet. And I would hide behind what I would call a blind, and I would wait. And I'm thinking, I'm going to catch a bird. Now, I never really ate a whole lot of birds. About the only birds that I've ever eaten in my life has been chicken, turkey, and some quail. But it didn't matter what kind of bird I was trying to catch. I just wanted to catch a bird. I was going to trap the bird. And you'd wait for that little bird to jump on the ground, and all of a sudden he'd eat this, eat this, eat this, eat this, and he'd just ease his way right under the box. And when he got far enough under that box, you could yank that stick, that box would fall down on top of him, and you caught you a bird. That is the picture. It's to lead to a trap. Well, not only that, but also in this verse, it says when he is drawn away or led to a trap, it's of his own lust and enticed. And what's amazing is when you look at the way that this is written, where it talks about drawing into a trap or enticed, it's got the idea of allurement. Now, we've got some men in our church that are good fishermen. And as a young boy in the summers at my grandparents' farm, I loved to fish. And to this day, my favorite lure, if I'm going fishing and I'm fishing with lures and not live bait, I love to have a Rapala minnow. It looks like a little minnow about that long. And sometimes it has two hooks, sometimes it has three, depending on how long or when you buy. You know those things are about $10 a piece now? That's just ridiculous. I mean, you used to buy one for about $1.50 when I was a kid. But if you go to the Bass Pro Shop, they still sell them, but you're not getting them for $1.50. But I would go fishing, and I would use that. And I do all kind of things with that thing. I mean, I would reel it fast to try to get it to dive deep. I would reel it slow to try to get it to float a little bit because I use the floaters and not the sinkers. Sometimes I'd even let it stop. And then I'd jerk it a little bit to make it wiggle like it was a wounded minnow. I've caught more fish in my limited fishing experience with a Rapala than any other lure that's out there. Now, your experience may be totally different than that. But that is the picture when you see that word enticement. And so, when you look at that, I want you to think about your own life. How many times have you looked at a shiny object and thought, I want that right there? I mean, I just gotta have that right there. And then when you got it, what did I want that for? You're saying amen for that. Miss Peggy's or Penny's going, oh yeah. Yeah. It's like, that is so pretty. Then it's like, ooh, I wish I wouldn't have got that. I guarantee you there's teenagers, if they would be honest, or maybe when you were a teenager, you could be honest, say, ooh, I wished I wouldn't have got that guy. I wished I wouldn't have got that gal. I wished I wouldn't have got that job. I wished I wouldn't have got that car. I was telling some of the men the other night, or Sunday, about a 72 Gran Torino Sport that I had. That thing was a money pit. But it was cool. And every dollar I made, it went right into that car. I mean, if you made $300, that's what it cost to run it. That thing tore up more often than you can imagine. Finally, I sold it to pay off my college debt. The guy that bought it never had a minute's trouble. It was like it was God's will for me to get rid of that thing. And so it was like, boy, I want that Gran Torino Sport so bad. I mean, it was candy apple red. It had a half vinyl top on it. It had a 351 Cleveland motor in it. That thing would run. And that thing would eat money. And I finally got rid of it. And I got out from underneath it. And it was a great, great day when that happened. But the look here is one that is a look that is alluring. Can you think of somebody in the Bible that maybe did that same thing? What about Abraham and Lot? Abraham and Lot, who are they? Uncle and nephew. And they're traveling together, and their herds are getting big. I mean, their livestock is being blessed. I mean, they're having goats and they're having sheep all over the place. And then all of a sudden, Abraham's herdsmen, Lot's herdsmen, they get to fussing with one another. And then they say, well, you know what? I guess we're going to have a meeting. And so Lot and Abraham meet, and Abraham says, son, look, you know I love you. But our guys are fighting all the time. I tell you what we need to do. We need to divide. You choose the direction you want to go, I'll take the other. So Lot thinks, man, this is okay. This old man's going senile. So he looks out at the well-watered plains of Jordan. And he says, that's what I want right there. And so Abraham says, okay. Instead of letting the elder have his choice, old Lot's like, that's what I want. And off he goes with his herdsmen and all of his herds. But where he was headed was a place called Sodom. Those plains look good. Then all of a sudden, as he's sitting out there at the door of that tent, he's looking and he's hearing the music. And he's seeing the little town of Sodom and the little town of Gomorrah. He's seeing them light up at night. I mean, you got these lanterns all over the place. And before long, he's not content to be at the well-watered plains. He's moved into the city. He got to looking, which meant he got to leaning, and ultimately he got to living in Sodom. What did Abraham do? He went the other direction, and God still blessed the old man. But old Lot, what he thought was good, what he saw with his eyes as being good, it ended up not being what he was thinking. He ended up losing a wife that turned into a pillar of salt. He ended up losing children in Sodom. And the two girls that were not married, he took them with him out of Sodom and started living in a cave. And those girls were so worried that they didn't have a man to marry. They got their own father drunk. And then you had two tribes of people that caused nothing but problems come from two incestuous relationships with a father and his two daughters. If you'd have looked at old Lot and said, Lot, could you go back, or would you go back and do it again? He'd say, hey, I'd let my Uncle Abraham do whatever he wanted to do. But he looked because there was an allurement there. Well, I want you to look with me at verse 14. Actually, verse 15. When lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin. And sin, when it's finished, bringeth forth death. Decisions sometimes have to be made. Choices have to be made. And one of the things that we've got to remember is this, that those decisions have consequences. In our passage here in verse 15, when that lust has been born. And the word born, bring forth there, has the idea of giving birth. But it also is a little different. It has the idea of a spawning. And maybe James does this intentionally, where that earlier we talked about the enticement, which was something that dealt with animals. Well, a spawn is also something that deals with like fish. You have salmon that will spawn. And so there's always that, maybe that animal connection that he's making here. And so it says, when this lust, and by the way, the lust here is a desire. It does not have to be sensual. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. So don't, in our culture, we have a tendency when we think of lust, we think of something sexual. But here, it can include that, but it can include other things as well. And so when these desires have spawned, it brings forth sin. Did you know that it is not a sin to be tempted? I want that to sink in for a moment. You can be tempted and not sin. As a matter of fact, the Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 13, that there is no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. In other words, it's just a common thing. If you're a human, you are tempted. And may I say, if you are a Christian, you are tempted. There used to be a guy on the radio many years ago over on the Big Gun in Decatur, and he talked about that he was a perfect Christian. He had not sinned in 20-something years. And I'm thinking, that guy's lying through his teeth. I mean, every one of us. Now, we shouldn't have a quota in the day. I know the Bible says that everybody's a sinner, so, you know, I got to get 10 things done today. I told you a little joke about the little kid that said the difference between the sins of commission and omission. The sins of commission are what you've done. The sins of omission is the list, those things that are on the list you hadn't got around to yet. All right? And so you've got these animalistic type things that are here in our passage, whether it's the enticement or whether it's the spawning. Have you ever thought about this? In almost every school in this country, they teach evolution and that man is basically the highest form of an animal, but that he's an animal. Anybody ever heard that? Everybody has, all right? We tell our kids that they are a higher form of an animal. Then when they act like it, we're surprised. That's what we do. And so when we read this and it says, it's conceived or it's spawned, it brings forth sin. But then it goes farther. And when it is finished, in other words, it's got the idea that there's a continuing thing going on. When it is done, the result is death. In other words, the idea, it came to fruition, there was an act, and now there's a result. There's an old adage that goes like this: if you sow a thought, you reap a habit. If you sow a habit, you reap a character. If you reap a character, or sow a character, then you reap an eternity. And so it all starts with what's on the inside, when a man is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. And every one of us are tempted. It does not matter. Many of you have probably heard of C.S. Lewis. He is one of the great, well, really one of the great apologists of the 20th century. He wrote a book from the devil's perspective. It's a group of letters. It's called the Screwtape Letters. Some of you may have heard of that. And in this letter, old Screwtape, who is like the head demon, he's writing to Wormwood, who is like his nephew. And this is what he says. He says to his nephew Wormwood, "I note with grave displeasure that your patient has become a Christian. Do not indulge the hope that you will escape the usual penalties. Indeed, in your better moments, I trust you would hardly even do or even wish to do so. But in the meantime, we must make the best of the situation. There's no need to despair. Hundreds of these adult converts have been reclaimed after a brief sojourn in the enemy's camp and are now with us. All the habits," and this is the phrase that I want you to remember, "all the habits of the patient or the new Christian, both mental and bodily are still in our favor. You know what that means? That means that everything that you could do before you met Christ, you've still got the potential to do that now. You go, man, I was wicked. Do you know we can still be wicked? I know of a man that was a choir director up above Gainesville, Georgia. He had a son that committed murder. The boy put the murdered victim's body in the trunk of the car. He began to panic. He went to his father, who was a song director of a church. He got his dad to help him dispose of the body, and his dad did it. They caught him. But can you imagine someone that names the name of the Lord, directs songs every day, helping to cover up a murder? Why? Because he was trying to help his son. And both of them ended up in prison. And so, when you look at verse 15, there's decisions that's got to be made. But then let me just mention this at the end. Look at verse 16. In verse 16, there's some things that we need to be deliberate about. And this will be quick. He says, do not err. Now, many times in our Bibles, when we read the word err, it has the idea of sinning. But I don't think this is what it means here. I think here, what it means is, do not make mistakes. In other words, make sure that you're not being misled by other people. Make sure that you are not being misled by yourself, and because all of us have the potential to be deceptive ourselves. We can talk ourselves into anything. We can tell ourselves all kind of stuff. But you and I need to make sure that we are not making mistakes. We can make decisions that are not good decisions. We can follow after those desires when they were not intended. I close with this. Today I went down to Daryl's office and I said, Daryl, I got a question for you. I need to know this. I've heard this and I need to check it. I said, you're a lot smarter when it comes to music than I am. I've been told that on this piano right over here, that if you were to go over, not touch the keyboard, but just mash the far right pedal, and then someone would get next to the piano with the lid open, and they would begin to sing, I've been told that one or two strings would begin to vibrate and it would give the exact notes that you sang. And I said, is that true? And he goes, I think it is in theory. And I said, okay, I appreciate it. Well, about 5 minutes later, I hear... I said, come in. He said, it's true. He came into the auditorium. He walked over to the piano. He mashed the far right pedal. And he began singing, and he could hear it coming back to him. Do you know that that pedal was not made for voices? It was made to let the hammers fall. You mash the pedal, and there's two things evidently that come down, and then the hammer can hit the string, and it will play. But it's doing something that it was not intended to do if you mash it and you sing. It's being led down a wrong path, and it just followed away. In other words, those strings were turned on by what it heard. If you and I aren't careful, we'll get turned on to things that we ought not be turned on to. No matter how old you are, you could be a young person, you could be an old person, and old people have temptations just like young people do. Do not err, brethren. Do not err. Next week, we'll pick up with a little more positive note in verse 17. Let's stand together. I appreciate you being here this evening.